each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey, welcome everyone. God bless you for tuning in to The Winds of Change. Father Tom Coyce here on a brain-wrinkling Wednesday. I want to continue a topic I started last week.
I am the gift.
And you will be treated with not only history, but theology, philosophy, maybe sprinkle in a little social.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Our obligations to try to make our home better. And by that I mean our home in the sense of where we live, in the sense of our family, the people with whom we live, and also the nation, which we call our homeland, right? So anyways, I started to tell you the story of a rather key Catholic priest in the 1800s by the name of Father Isaac Hecker. Father Hecker is probably most known for as the founder of the Paulist priests. You might hear them every now and then. They published a lot of stuff still, missalettes and music books and things like that. But that's probably not what I want to talk to you about. His personal story is a story that touches on a theme that I talk about quite often with you, and that is that the crazy relationship between church and state, the ongoing, and it has been constant since Jesus ascended into heaven until yesterday's newspaper. Well, if you read newspapers, wherever you get your news, anyways, it is a constant. And so anyways, to follow the story of Father Hecker is to throw ourselves in the midst of that great debate, how we as Catholics should live in this society, how we read the signs of our time. Some of the things that have happened in the past just don't happen today. One thing that comes to my mind right off the bat is when you hear certain theologians and historians talk about the death of Christendom, what they mean by that is that for 1,000 years or more, 1,500 years, you could maybe say, there was a partnership, a marriage, a collaboration between church and state, and something like a king having a priest, confessor, or spiritual director was par for the course. When Jesuits came along, they actually took that job pretty seriously, and a lot of Jesuit priests were priest confessors or spiritual directors to some of the high and mighty. That was just sort of an accepted thing in society. With the death of Christendom, that no longer happened and happens. You get a little of that today when you see stories of people like a Protestant minister visiting the White House or so. I do recall seeing a video clip or pictures of a number of ministers, Protestant ministers, praying over and with President Trump, actually. That I it brought a smile. And a key element in Christendom where people of faith are sharing, are trying to help, are trying to pray for, trying to give good direction to otherwise not very religious people, people in the political world. I might note, I haven't seen that kind of thing over the president, the present president, and he is a Catholic, at least in name, we're going to say, I do grant him that, and I'm like many Catholics. So is he truly seeking out the wise counsel of priests? A lot of priests are giving him counsel, but I don't know that they're wise priests giving him counsel, shall we say? Anyways, the story of Father Isaac Hecker is very interesting to me, and I hope it is to you, because we're at a crossroads in this country, and to admit that is to seek light, is to seek answers, and if we are believers in the good Almighty God and the Lord, certainly God should be able to guide us as he has throughout the course of human history, right? And so what I want to do is pick up the story of Father Isaac. He was a convert. He was a bit of a wandering, they called him a seeker. Some people who know, always looking for deeper answers, always trying to understand the big questions of life. He, for a while, went to Henry David Thoreau's Walden Pond and lived with him. Well, he didn't live with him, but he talked with him a great deal. And or maybe he lived with Ralph Waldo Emerson, who those two guys, Emerson and Thoreau, were famous people in the 1800s, just before the American Civil War, even a bit afterwards. They sort of sat out the Civil War. That's an interesting commentary, as it were, because they were they called themselves transcendentalists. We're going to transcend the practical matters of life, and we're going to dedicate ourselves to higher thoughts and endeavors. We're going to be philosophers and poets and songwriters and all these kinds of things. And actually, Isaac Hecker went there. He went there because he had a very deep sense of the mystical in life. He had a supernatural experience when he was young. He calls it an angel appeared to him, a bright light that was guiding him, showing him that there was reality beyond what we see and hear with our senses. Anyways, he didn't get the full meaning of that vision, but it stuck with him very, very powerfully for most of his life. And in trying to understand what that meant and trying to live a life that incorporates this mystical, supernatural part of life, he found himself looking for mentors, and he stumbled on the transcendentalists of New England, like Thoreau and Emerson and a few others. And so he gets disenchanted with them, and I think for a very good, I'm going to say a Catholic reason, because if you are going to try to tell yourself and others that you are living above the practical necessities of life, someone's going to have to take care of the practical necessities of life for you. So if you want to spend your life as a philosopher, you better have a good philosophy that includes the necessity of the practicalities of life. Here's an interesting little quote from Walden's Pond, Henry David Thoreau's. And he's saying this in a precious way, like many philosophers throughout history have said, that we are not just economic machines, that certainly Marxism and communism have forced on the history of mankind. And you could even say it's taking its place front and center stage today in our world. But he says this, let's see. To my astonishment, I was informed on leaving college that I had studied navigation. Why, if I had taken one turn around the harbor, I should have known more about it. In other words, he's saying, trying to navigate.
Wow. You just wrinkled my brain, man.
He's trying to say, figuring out how to navigate in the real world will teach you more about navigation.
You're going to need a bigger boat.
Yeah, we do need a bigger boat than if you studied navigation just from the books. So he does have this anti-intellectual twist to him, because it's an anti-educational twist to him. And for that, I want to give him kudos, because there's a lot of reasons to be skeptical about educational systems today. But he goes on, he says, even the poor student studies and is taught only political economy, while that economy of living, which is synonymous with philosophy, is not even sincerely professed in our colleges. That's kind of what pushed him to go out and build his own little house next to Walden Pond. And he's very proud that he can build a house and grow his own food and be independent from the big society around him, because trying to raise enough money to buy a chair takes a lot more energy and work than chopping down a tree and making your own chair. And so he has this philosophical independence. And that's why I think he's popular with many people. And he doesn't want our own understanding of life to be reduced to just the economic, you know, everything from Dolly Parton's movie, Working 9 to 5, Can't Take Another Minute, or I'm Sick and Tired of This Job, and I'm Out of Here. Anytime we have that feeling, we're feeling what Henry David Thoreau felt when he wanted to reject the economic man. He wanted to spend more time, if he could save time in order to spend time philosophizing and enjoying the beautiful world around him, so be it. Though in that process, he does have this anti-intellectualism which accompanies it. Namely, that there's good reasons, there are good reasons for colleges and school. He was just criticizing studying navigation in that little passage I read. And yet, I would criticize his criticism by saying, well, you might never really know how to work a compass or a sextant, or how to navigate with the stars on the ocean, if you didn't have someone teach it to you. You can walk around town all you want and figure out navigation in your local neighborhood, but the progress of mankind needs to pass on the wisdom from those before you. I think that's one of the big major mistakes he's making. He's kind of assuming that you can learn everything on your own, and you don't need no teachers. You don't need no stinking badges in order to learn stuff more stuff. which it's tempting to fall into that way of thinking. It reminds me, there's a Paul Simon song, right? That goes something like that. I didn't learn enough about history, geography. I didn't know what 1 and 1 and 2 is, but I know that I love you. It's another one of those anti-intellectual songs where we're tempted to say, I don't need no stinking teachers. That's why our educational systems, it is so important to fix them. We're getting more and more people to distrust them because they're saying more and more crazy things. Okay, so back to the story of Father Isaac Hecker. And so he becomes a priest. He actually criticizes Henry David Thoreau and Ralph Waldo Emerson and these little utopian communities that they were trying to found. They did establish, but he left one, and he says famously that it looks like those transcendentalist gurus don't do much work. He says, the women do all the work, and the men don't even know about farming. It's a kind of a scathing critique, is it not? And you could somewhat see that attitude reflected in some of the, when you read the stories of Native American Indians and how, well, the men did go out hunting for the deer and the buffalo, but the women did most of the work around the home. And men have to be very cautious of burdening the women of their households with too much of the work of the household if they're not providing, doing the heavy lifting themselves in many different ways.
Wow. You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Yeah. Okay. So we get Isaac Hecker to become a priest, and he joins the Redemptorists, who were primarily a German established community in the United States. And he likes them, even though, Hecker, he does have German blood, but he's kind of like me, a Slovak American that doesn't speak Slovak. So he wasn't that strong of a German, but he joined the Redemptorists. And the thing he did like about them was that they had these things called missions. He'd go around the country, and a parish would say, a mission is coming. So for a week, we still have that going on in some ways, much, much less than it used to be. But he was having great success at those missions. I, as a pastor, often appreciate a mission priest coming in. You know why? One of the reasons why a local pastor will appreciate a mission priest coming in is because the local pastor knows there's aspects of people's lives that you tend to avoid, because you know if you touch on certain moral issues that need to be touched on, but you will offend people, so you tend not to talk about them. A mission priest who comes in from far away can tackle some of the moral issues that need to be tackled, and then they're gone. So if the people don't like what they heard, they won't be so mad at the pastor, they'll just be mad at the mission priest. The mission priest might say, he was teaching Catholicism. I have to say to my dear listeners that that's brings up obviously the topic of moral issues associated with marriage. Right to life versus abortion rights, artificial contraception versus natural family planning, divorce and remarriage, the necessity of annulments versus non, etc. All those kind of things, very difficult to preach about with your local people, because many people will get offended. So many priests just tend to not talk about those. Some of the priests don't really believe in the official church teachings on those things, and that's a problem. But if a local priest believes in them but just avoids them because he wants to remain liked by his congregation, you could sort of cut him some slack in one way. It's very difficult to preach about the sins associated with marriage, what have you, and do it in such a way that the people still like you. I'm gonna brag a little bit from my little parish. I do touch on those topics every now and then, and my people have reacted very beautifully in many ways. Have I lost some? I'm sure I have, but I guess I'm gonna say God has helped me help them in a way that they appreciate it, as it were. Oh goodness, there is the reward room that's opened up. Glad we have the reward room opened up, because we also have a punishment room, which we haven't had to use in a while, thank goodness. But it is past our first break time, right, Nick? So let's continue with our show after this break. I'm going to try to unravel the story of Isaac Hecker and bring it to our own day and age, and how important learning some important lessons from that story for our time in our day and age, right where we are. Anyways, I'm Father Tom Coyce. I'm guest host on the Winds of Change. You are listening to the new Catholic radio channel for EWTN. We are 88.5 WSFI and 950 WNDZ.
St. Stanislaus Koska Academy. St. Stan's is an exceptional private elementary school in Chicago, serving preschool, age 3 and 4, pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, and first grades. We incorporate Catholic values and rigorous academic social-emotional learning, Chinese, Spanish, STEM, and more, providing our students with leadership and life skills to transform our world. St. Stanislaus Koska Academy is conveniently located one block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. To schedule your tour, visit ststandschicago.org. ststandschicago.org.
I'm Father Tom Coyce, and you are listening to the Winds of Change.
You are invited to attend the Father's Tom Art Show, Inspiring Faith in God Through Beauty, with Father Tom Loya and Father Tom Coyce, Sunday afternoon, August 13th, from 2 until 4. You'll enjoy original art by both priest artists, Father Tom Loya and Father Tom Coyce. Stroll through the different galleries featuring original art, while also enjoying a light summer sangria wine and cheese buffet. Learn how beauty can lead to a deeper longing for the divine artist. That's the Father's Tom Art Show, with both artist priests, Father Tom Loya and Father Tom Coyce. Sunday afternoon from 2 until 4, August 13th at Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Church, 14610 South Willcook Road, Homer Glen, Illinois. The Father's Tom Art Show is co-sponsored by Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Church and the Sag Bridge Mission Society.
Hey, welcome back. If you're anywhere near the southwest side on Sunday afternoon out there in Homer Glen, do come out to the Father Loya's Byzantine Catholic Church. We're going to do that art fair. And I'll give my little speech about art and faith. I'll have to do that on a radio show. But we're in the middle of Isaac Hecker today, because it's really illuminating, and we're always going to be trying to figure out how to deal with the relationship between church and state. Just like in a marriage, you're always going to be dealing with the relationship between man and woman, husband and wife. And this is the moral thinking writ large, as opposed to the domestic church we're talking. So here's another way of drawing you into this debate and how important it is. And again, I want to I want to emphasize it, a number of errors that I see throughout the story. I counted 13 errors in the story. But here's a way to, this is a quote from Victor Davis Hanson. You might know him from Heritage Foundation. He says this, and it's hard to deny what he's saying. He says, "We are in the midst of one of the most radical revolutions in American history. It is as far-reaching and dangerous as the turbulent years of the 1850s. Obviously, that's the turbulence over the slavery issue, right? In the 1860s or the 1930s, you know, the Great Depression and the post-World War I, the in between the two World Wars years, great, great turmoil. He says, every aspect of American life and culture is under assault, including the very processes by which we govern ourselves and the manner in which we live. The revolution began a number of years ago that sought to divide Americans into oppressed and oppressors, and then substitute race for class victimization. It was empowered by the bi-coastal wealth accrued from globalization. The elites of New York and Washington and California, right? And it honed in during the COVID lockdown, quarantine-fed economic downturn, the George Floyd riots, and the aftermath thereof. The revolution was boosted by fanatic opposition to the presidency of President Trump. And the result is an America that is unrecognizable from what it was a mere decade ago." If you agree with Victor David Hanson on that, and it's hard to reject what he's saying there, this question about the relationship between church and state becomes all the more key and important. So, going back to the 1800s and the story of Isaac Hecker, when America was growing, and Catholics were being persecuted in a lot of different ways, Catholics were also getting well established, and the missions that Father Hecker was giving throughout the country were so successful, and he said he noticed a lot of non-Catholics that came to the missions. And he, like almost all of us, would know you might take a different approach, you might preach it from a different angle, the same truths to people that aren't cradle Catholics or Catholics at all. And so he started to have post-mission separate meetings with non-Catholics, mostly Protestant Christians, of course, but probably sprinkled in a few others. And here's one of the big mistakes that happened. The superior of the Redemptorist got word that he was having these special sessions with non-Catholics, and the superior, a guy by the name of Father George Ruin, calls him into his office and says, "You're not supposed to do that." And he was kind of surprised. His superior told him, "Your mission is only to the Catholics," which, from where I'm sitting, sounds like the superior wasn't preaching Catholicism. Catholicism is a word that means universal. And it sounds a bit like the modern attitude that says you don't proselytize. Don't try to convert anybody. You know, you get that in a certain sense today. So anyways, the superior really turns against Father Hecker, but a lot of Father Hecker's fellow Redemptorists are on his side. And so they say, you got to go to Rome to our head-to-head superior, not just the superior in Massachusetts, but the superior in Rome. That's the way of hierarchical church, right? Every boss has a boss somewhere. And that's kind of a challenging thing to believe and live by, but it is part of our Catholic heritage. And if you believe Jesus established the church and had St. Peter as the first pope, and we believe in the hierarchy, then you figure that the Holy Spirit is working through it in the best of ways. And a lot of times it does, but there are sometimes human error and human stubbornness, for one reason or another, gets in the way, and that's what sort of happened. So Father Hecker goes to Rome. He meets with the superior there, and the superior, here's one of the other big errors. I'm going to call this error number three. Actually, I only told you one error. The first error was that the Pope in Rome never wrote any encyclical to the American Catholics to encourage American Catholics to embrace their new homeland. I think it's a big error on the part of the popes at the time that they never encouraged Catholics to assimilate, I guess is the word we would use today. Take this as your new home, love it, assimilate as best you can. They didn't say that because their primary worry was that America was a fast-growing, up-and-coming nation, but it was a fast-growing, up-and-coming Protestant nation. It was so obvious that the stories that got back to Europe and to Rome, that the main religiosity of the people of the United States was Protestantism.
Wow.
So the Pope never...
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
That is brain wrinkling. So the Pope never really encouraged American Catholics to embrace this as their new home. And I think it has a lot to do with the very concept of what a nation is. In Europe, for 1,000 years or more, the church never had to say to French Catholics, embrace your French nationality. Never had to say to Polish Catholics, embrace your Polish heritage. Italian, German, what have you, right? Because for those many, many centuries, nationality meant your ethnic heritage. And as long as Christendom lived, as long as Christendom existed, there was a very symbiotic partnership between the secular rulers and the religious rulers. Like I said at the beginning, it was certainly very common for a king to have a priest confessor. He would consult him. Must have been a tough job at times. I've always thought, if I were a bishop, and I'm sure that will not happen anytime soon, my friends, just saying. But if I were a bishop, I would try to be on the phone or visit the senators' offices, the presidents, the governors. I would try to bug them as a spiritual director. Of course, a lot of them wouldn't want to be bugged, but and some need to be congratulated and strengthened. I was in Washington, D.C. once, and some of you from the Chicagoland area will know of a representative by the name of Dan Lipinski. He was a Democrat from the Chicagoland area, but he's a very strong pro-life Democrat, kind of a burning bush of sorts. He's an anomaly, in other words. He lost his election the last time, and he made a very powerful and beautiful talk about how he was pressured and pressured not to give up his pro-life stance, or we're going to back the present representative from that district is a very pro-choice Catholic woman. Anyways, when I was in Washington, D.C. visiting him, he had a concerned look on his face, and he said, I got to show you something. As a pro-life legislator, he tried to hold the line on funding of abortion, just all the issues that go along with it. And he wrote a letter to the Vatican saying, in a humble way, what am I supposed to do? Can you give me guidance? And the letter he got from the Vatican was nondescript, bad counsel, like no counsel at all. Thank you for your letter. We will bring it to the attention of the Holy Father, blah, blah, blah. Yours truly. In other words, don't bother us. Don't call us, we'll call you. And I saw on Representative Lipinski's face and in his heart a kind of a sad frustration. Anyways, Cardinal George, to his credit, often mentioned that he did pick up the phone and try to talk to people, talk to senators and governors and what have you. That's more of the spirit of Christendom than what we're getting most of the time today. So anyways, that's why the first error in the story of Father Hecker is that the Pope didn't encourage Catholics to embrace their new land. Father Hecker was one who said, I'm going to embrace this new country, and if we do this right, we can make the United States a Catholic country. He had that belief. His friend Orestes Bronson also was in that camp. But the popes never did write that kind of letter or any kind of encouragement, primarily because they figured that nation is a Protestant nation, and you're not supposed to embrace the nation. But it wasn't a Protestant nation. It was trying to be neutral, but obviously it wasn't. And God bless the Protestant leaders of the United States of America because Whoa. They wanted it to be strongly Christian.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Yeah. One thing I often hope, and I see this in a lot of Protestant homeschool people, is today, in our world today, people are saying, oh, I can't send my kids to a public school. There's too much anti-Christian values being taught. In other words, the government schools are not Protestant Christian anymore. And I wish they would open their eyes a little bit. That's kind of why Catholics started Catholic schools in the first place. Because Catholics realize you're not going to get Catholic values and beliefs and understanding of history if they're all taught by Protestants. Now it's they're experiencing what Catholics had experienced, and unfortunately, even Catholic schools are a bit woke and are sort of floundering, trying to give a generic form of religiosity to their people, afraid of some of the harder issues. Just like I was saying, a pastor would be afraid to preach the truth and the beauty of Humani Vitae, for instance. And now we got transgenderism and gay marriage. And so in schools, you got the same kind of thing going on. Unfortunately, Catholic schools don't even do what the Catholic Church did with the missionary. Bring in a missionary and preach the hard doctrines and let them be mad at the visitor who comes in. Most Catholic schools don't even do that. So, okay, So the other error was the superior in Massachusetts telling Father Hecker that he's not supposed to work with non-Catholics. Your mission is only to Catholics. Now, the third error comes when he gets to Rome, and all the superior in Rome says is, first thing he says as he walks in the door, did you get my letter? The letter that the superior in Rome sent to him back in the States. Father Hecker says, yes, I did. The superior says to him, I told you in that letter, don't come without your superior's permission. You didn't get your superior's permission. And I'm sure Father Hecker was operating under the great strategy that many of us employ at times, better to ask forgiveness than permission, right? Well, it didn't work for him. And so the superior in Rome says, get out of here. And I'm going to have to relieve you of your faculties. I think he relieved him of his faculties. He couldn't even say Mass or so. So this was a tremendously terrible thing to see. He was in Rome, in the shadow of St. Peter's great dome, right? Thinking that here is the place that will have all the answers, kind of like what St. Francis of Assisi did when he was challenged about the establishment of his Franciscan friars. He walked to Rome and said, I'm going to ask the Pope. That was Pope Urban III at the time back then. Praise be to Jesus that the Pope gets down on his knees and kisses St. Francis's feet and says, flourish like the palm trees. Beautiful scene that's in a great movie about St. Francis. Anyways, so that didn't happen to Father Hecker. He's left and he's wondering, what the heck am I going to do now? He realizes, well, I got to start my own religious order, right? Okay, oops, I'm sorry. We're going a little bit late. Nick, are you there? We better get on our next break, right?
That's cool, no problem. Sure.
He's this fascinating story. I'm Father Tom Coys. I'm guest host on The Winds of Change. You are listening to the new EWTN Catholic Radio Voice for Chicagoland. We are WSFI 88.5 FM and WNDZ 750 AM.
You are invited to attend the Father's Tom Art Show, Inspiring Faith in God Through Beauty with Father Tom Loya and Father Tom Coys. Sunday afternoon, August 13th from 2 until 4. You'll enjoy original art by both priest artists, Father Tom Loya and Father Tom Coys. Stroll through the different galleries featuring original art while also enjoying a light summer sangria wine and cheese buffet. Learn how beauty can lead to a deeper longing for the divine artist. Sunday afternoon from 2 until 4, August 13th at Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Church, 14610 South Willcook Road, Homer Glen, Illinois. Co-sponsored by Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Church and the Sag Bridge Mission Society.
We are the students of St. Stan's LaCosta Academy.
Your children can join them for face-to-face classroom instruction. Visit ststanschicago.org to find out how.
And you're listening to The Winds of Change.
St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, is open 24 hours a day, 7 days per week, for adoration of the Blessed Sacrament in the iconic monstrance. The Blessed Sacrament is reposed during the celebration of Mass and during special events. St. Stan's doors are always open for adoration. Come anytime, day or night. St. Stan's is located 2 blocks north of Division on Noble, right off the Kennedy. Visit ststanschurch.org.
Hello again, Father Tom Coys here. I'm going to try to sneak in a number of these other errors that I see in the story of Father Hecker that we have to try to correct in our own day today. So we left Father Hecker off in Rome. He just gets kicked out of the Redemptoris, or at least suspended for a spell. He's wondering, what the heck does God want me to do? How could, to me, that would be a tremendous kick in the stomach, one way or another, to have your superior say that you're not supposed to evangelize with non-Catholics? It seems un-Catholic to me. But again, we can see that different parts of the world today. So anyways, thank goodness he meets a cardinal in Rome by the name of Cardinal Barnabo. Not Barnaby, Barnabo. So he's not so anti-Catholic as so many of the others in Rome at the time. Anti-American, I should say. And so he sees, Father Cardinal Barnabo sees the United States as kind of an up-and-coming nation, something that's going to be hard to ignore. Prophet, yes, yes, yes. Anyways, he arranges to have Father Hecker meet with Pope Pius IX at the time. That's where he, the Pope. And so here's where, unfortunately, Father Hecker, as wise as he was, he probably didn't explain his case as best. Maybe if he had a super sharp lawyer working on his behalf, good canon lawyer, he might have had more success. But he bumbles a little bit by maybe praising the American spirit too much without recognizing the heresies that are afloat. And then he criticizes Rome a little too much for not seeing their errors. You know, that's a theme that happens all the time. And I got to touch on at least one way I think we can and should deal with the difficulties when we are in a debate with hierarchy in any way, shape, or form. Remember that the Catholic Church is a family, and the bishops, cardinals, and the Pope ultimately are like parents to us who are not, and we're supposed to be obedient children, and yet we can and should dialogue with them and try to point out certain things we see that need improving or that are outright wrong. But just like in a family, you may have a mom or a dad that you disagree with, but you don't go and say that that's not my mom or dad. Of course, it's your mom or dad. They may be wrong. They may be dead wrong. They may be corrupt. They may be, could even say, evil, I suppose. But you still want them to convert, to grow, to be better. That's a tough thing. So unfortunately for Father Hecker, he was in Rome talking to Pope Pius IX as Catholicism in Italy was being hugely challenged by the nationalism of Italy. At that time, Italy wasn't a nation yet. The spirit of uniting all the provinces of Italy into one nation called Italy was ripe, and unfortunately, the ones pushing for that nationalism were, in a lot of ways, anti-Catholic. This is where we got to take note real quick, because they had so many anti-Catholic thoughts, but they were all baptized Catholics, by and large. Reminds me a lot of problems in Mexico. A lot of the socialist slash even communist kind of political leaders in Mexico that were attacking the Catholic Church and the wiser, more religious, supernaturally minded priests, bishops, Catholic, catechists, just your average run-of-the-mill Catholic. But the ones who were attacking Catholicism were themselves baptized Catholics, and that was the case in Italy until generations kind of wiped that out. So Father Hecker was the right person to preach and to try to shine some light on the beauty of Catholicism, but he was in Italy at the wrong time. The Italian Democrat Revolution was underway. So the Pope is like, you know, I can't really trust this. And these nations that are becoming so anti-Catholic, we gotta keep our distance. Okay, stand 6 feet away. don't catch the stupid. But thanks to the Holy Spirit, Pope Pius IX does grant Father Hecker the right, the ability to establish a new community in the United States. And that's how the Paulists were born. He says, go, you have my blessing. Bishop Hughes, back in New York, gives Father Hecker a parish. And so they begin the work of teaching and preaching and all the rest. In order to raise money, he was building a very big church. In order to raise money, Father Hecker goes on a speaking tour, not the old mission, but a speaking tour, much like matter of fact, in order to fit in, he doesn't even wear his collar. He goes in dressed in civvies, as we sometimes say. Actually, Ralph Waldo Emerson was one of the chief directors of this lecture circuit. And he's an old friend, so Father Hecker goes to Ralph Waldo Emerson and says, hey, why don't you get me on the circuit? I got a lot of things to share. And Emerson is like, oh my gosh, I can't endorse you. You're one of those fanatical Catholics. But he reluctantly says, okay, but I'm not going to endorse you, and believe me, nobody's going to come. Well, to Ralph Waldo Emerson's chagrin and surprise, lots of people came when Father Hecker went to talk about the United States, freedom, the intellectual pursuit of theology, etc. And it sort of embarrassed Emerson, etc. So anyways, Hecker says, Christianity is never better than when it is connected to freedom and the intellect. And certainly Thomas Aquinas would give him kudos for that, right? I think, Nick, we want to get in our last break here, even though I'm a little off sync here.
We can.
Our 15-minute segments, but let's get in the last break and try to continue this marvelous story yet more. It's always going to be with us, and let's pray that we can learn great lessons as we look back so that we can live better today, right? I'm Father Tom Coyce. You're listening to the new Catholic radio voice of EWTN. I'm guest host on The Winds of Change with Father Anthony Bush. We are WSFI 88.5 and 9750 WNDZ.
St. Stanislaus Koska Academy. St. Stan's is an exceptional private elementary school in Chicago, serving preschool, age 3 and 4, pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, and first grades. We incorporate Catholic values and rigorous academic social-emotional learning, Chinese, Spanish, STEM, and more, providing our students with leadership and life skills to transform our world. St. Stanislaus Koska Academy is conveniently located one block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. To schedule your tour, visit ststanschicago.org. ststanschicago.org.
I'm Father Tom Coyce, and you are listening to The Winds of Change.
St. Stanislaus Koska, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, is open 24 hours a day, 7 days per week, for adoration of the Blessed Sacrament in the iconic monstrance. The Blessed Sacrament is reposed during the celebration of Mass and during special events. St. Stan's doors are always open for adoration. Come anytime, day or night. St. Stan's is located two blocks north of Division on Noble, right off the Kennedy. Visit ststanschurch.org.
Hello again. With a little bit of time left here, let me touch on another big issue that happened in his life that obviously relates to us today. I mentioned that the Italian nationalism spirit was heavy, obviously, on the mind of the Pope, but also is not just happening in Italy, but it was all over the world in a big way. And another heir that I think us Catholics missed in that whole debate is pointing out how in the United States, our nation had a different outlook, had a different nature than most other nations, in that our nation was a nation of nationalities. That doesn't make any sense in the old way of thinking. How can you have a nation with many nationalities? It's just like an oxymoron, perhaps. But if you translate the word nationality to ethnicities, then you got a different picture. And that the United States, as a nation of many ethnicities, works and is, it's like a image of what Catholicism is supposed to be. In the world picture, Catholicism is supposed to fit very beautifully into all the different nations of the world, all the different ethnicities of the world. And here in the United States, we had lots of ethnicities, so we look for a way of uniting the diverse people, and the way that which unites people is truth, something that's true for everyone. When you get to the idea, and for so many, just the whole idea, I like what Dennis Prager, some of you know who he is on the radio. Dennis Prager is fond of saying truth is not a left-wing value. There are so many people that aren't really concerned with uncovering, or the very concept of truth is verboten, shall we say. And that's so, you know, and I sense that, I feel that, and I hope you do too. And with all the different duplicities of the law, the double standards where the law is being applied to different people, you can see that in the different ways that the Department of Justice, certain judges, the double standards that are being applied by people in authority. Double standards are a result of moral relativism. Moral relativism breeds double standards like stagnant water breeds mosquitoes, like a bicycle without a lock on in the middle of a busy area of the city breeds bicycle thieves. You know, there's just that reality called original sin, and moral relativism breeds double standards. You know, that not that that the judge that applies the law differently according to a person's ideology or philosophical or political party is different than the thief who steals a bicycle on the parking lot. But it's a more sophisticated way, and both are, in a very real sense, motivated by moral relativism. So the issue of papal infallibility comes, and oh gosh, we need to go into that a lot more. But I hope this little chapter in American history, the Catholic Church and priests, has helped us firm up our faith in our time and our world today. So God bless you for listening. This has been Brain Wrinkling Wednesday with Father Tom Coyce. We are the EWTN Catholic Radio Voice for Chicagoland, WNDZ 750 AM and 88.5 WSFI. God bless you.
So sit on the fence, can you see? Meaningless thought, the shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred, the time is now.
no time to hide.